Welcome to the Zen Stoic Path. On this episode, we have a very special guest joining us. We have Dr. Mario Garcia. Now, Dr. Mario Garcia is one of my OG mentors in the coaching world. He taught me a lot of the fundamentals of what I know and use today to create transformations with my clients. So I couldn't thank him enough, and I am so grateful and honored that he is joining us here on this podcast today. Now, this man is a wealth of knowledge. I mean, he has more PhDs than I can count and has been in the coaching world since 1992. So he's been doing this since before it was cool, and he has impacted countless lives through his career. Now, we get into a lot of important topics today in terms of living authentically, doing what you're made for, and living a life of purpose. And Dr. Mario Garcia, one of my favorite things about him is that he is not dogmatic in any of what he studies. So he is able to pull from multiple schools of thought and weave them into a cohesive message that really and truly gets people results and transformations that they are desiring. So I'm really excited to share this with you. Dr. Mario Garcia brings a very interesting take from faith-based coaching, as he is the executive pastor at Miami Vineyard Church. So he brings a really cool perspective that I have never heard from the biblical sense, and how it applies to actually creating a life purpose and actually finding that within you so that you can live authentically and make the impact that you're looking for in this world. I'm excited for you to get to know him, as he has been a huge influence in my life. Let's get into the show. Dr. Mario Garcia. Man, it has been a while, and I'm so glad to be able to have you on the show. This is, for those listeners who are tuning in, this is my OG mentor in the coaching world, and wouldn't be where I am without you, man. So I'm very grateful to have you here.
You're too kind. It's always an honor to see what you're doing, how you're doing it, the lives that you are touching. It's just a blessing to see your growth. And I had a very small part.
A very important part. Moved that little, faith in the mustard seed essentially moved
mustard seed.
So yes, I'm very, very grateful to have you here, man.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Amazing. So I wanted to begin just by asking you, because in the spirit of you being one of my original mentors in the coaching world and essentially giving me a lot of the scaffolding that I have built upon all these years up until today, I'm curious, like, what originally inspired you to get into the world of coaching others and helping them have transformations, breakthroughs, and experience freedom within themselves?
Wow, that is a very good question. And I often tell the story that for most people that may not know me, I joined the Army at 17, right out of high school. And my parents couldn't afford sending me to college. My mom decided in her 40s to have another baby. So when I was 16, my mom had a baby girl. And so at 17, I was graduating and looking for options. I was in Puerto Rico. I was originally born in New York City. And so I joined the U.S. Army, and my goal was A, to serve my country, because all of the males in my family had always served, and B, was to get an education. You know, they talked about the GI Bill and all those benefits. So I wanted to be a part of that. So I was sent to Germany as my first assignment. And when I get there, they assigned me to this squad. This squad leader is a sergeant, three striper, and his name was Tommy Tucker. And so he posed a very interesting question. Like, in the initial encounter, he goes, "Why are you here?" And I go, "I'm here to serve my country." And he goes, "Yeah, why are you really here?" And I said, "I'm really here to serve my country." So I told him, you know, my heritage. And he says, "Well, what else would you like to accomplish in your time together?" And I said, "I'd love to go to college. I just graduated from high school. And I'm only 17, so I have a life before me, but my parents didn't have the means." And he said, "If you're really and truly committed to going to college while you're here, A, you know you're in the infantry." I was an infantry soldier. "And you're going to be going to a lot of field exercises. So it's not like we're going to be here in the barracks all the time. So it's going to take an amount of sacrifice to get what you want done. And I said, I completely understand, but I'm committed to do it. So what do I need to do? So he sent me to the Army Education Center. And long story short, his commitment to me was that whether we were on base or if we're in a field exercise in Germany, he would give me his Jeep driver to come back to the college, because every military installation has several colleges. And then the driver would wait for me and take me back out to the field. And that happened during my 2 years in Germany, twice a week, no matter where we were. We could have been in the field 5 hours away, 10 hours away. He'd send me and bring me back. And it was difficult. But this is what I got from him. With, you know, this was 1976, dude. I'm dating myself a little bit here. So the concept of coaching was, as you know, very limited to just sports back then. But he was my original coach because he cared, he guided me. And even though he was a sergeant, he could tell me what to do, but he would always invite me in. And that is such a different attitude. That is a coaching attitude that you see in football coaches, baseball, and everything else in the sports. And so fast forward, when I'm almost near retirement, 3 years before I retired in 93, my commander, when I was stationed in Puerto Rico, had nominated me for an award that I had no idea. It was called the 10 Outstanding Young Person of the World Award. And in my category, I was honored in humanitarian service for the things that I do for God and country and my community. And so I wasn't doing anything to seek recognition, but he recognized some potential in me. And it was an award that was given normally to young men and women under the age of 40. So I win this award as one of the 10 Outstanding Young Americans. That same year in the fall, I win the World Award, and that opens a huge door. I got to tell you, in 5 years, I went to 45 countries speaking, not just, you know, as a motivational speaker and a leader, but actually as a winner from the Army, who was the first Army officer to ever win it. And so in 1992, I was invited to Hong Kong for this world conference. And it was going to be the location where they were going to hold the first Junior Chamber International Coaching Institute. They were just bringing it, putting it together. And if you recall, 1992 was pretty much the same year Tony Robbins was doing that here in the United States. Mm-hmm. So while Tony was doing it here in the United States, I was over in Hong Kong getting trained. And what happens is, after I complete the course, I get invited in to be part of the training team. So in 1993 and beyond, I'm again doing coaching, doing leading, doing training in countries, Spanish, English speaking, etc. And that's the genesis of how I actually started to not just doing coaching, but delivering coaching certifications to individuals throughout the world in both English and Spanish. And so that's how we arrived here.
Amazing.
And yeah. What's crazy, as you know, is that years later in 2014, I actually start working with Tony Robbins as one of his coaches on his coach training team for almost 3.5 years.
So that's right. That's where you and I met. And what I always like to share with people whenever I talk about you is that you were coaching before it was cool.
And you true story. Before the title, before the right. Social media, I'm a coach kind of thing.
Exactly. And you know, I feel like you are one of the pioneers that paved that path so that it was possible for someone like myself to get into the game. And I remember we met in that coaching world of Tony Robbins, and after you had left, I remember you decided to start teaching and actually certifying people as coaches and certifying people in NLP or neuro-linguistic programming for those who are not familiar with that. And that's when my world just opened up, right? Like, I didn't know the possibilities of being able to heal some or help someone heal themselves rather with mm-hmm. such profound techniques that people will walk out of a session at, like, after the stuff that you taught me and talk about how that one day felt like 10 years of therapy in a single day. And where all this really, really hit me, and I know you remember this, is when I brought my dad into your office when he was diagnosed with melanoma. And when I brought him in, I thought you were doing the session, but apparently not. It was me. And you were just there guiding me and just keeping me like on the path, which I so appreciate, because I got to have that experience with my dad, which, you know, 6 months later, he was free of all of his symptoms. And
yeah,
I do
remember that.
Yeah,
that was a powerful moment. And so I just saw in you so much of me at your age, that because Tommy Tucker believed in me, I believed that God would use you to even strengthen your relationship with your dad even more if you were part of that reframing process, mm-hmm. Of that healing process. And so we just went with it, and the results were just tremendous.
Oh yeah. I still get chills thinking about that those 2 days that we got to spend over there.
We often get those testimonies, Victor, as you said, people in either recovery systems, which are great. I refer people to recovery all the time. We have a program in our church, which we call Celebrate Recovery. They do a tremendous amount of work. However, what we found is that when there are layers of so much trauma and things that are starting to manifest in the body, because they haven't been released, because they haven't been dealt with, because the individual spiritual journey or journey with God has not been in alignment, that once you clear out the stuff and really speak to the individual spirit, right? Because the soul is going to want to interfere, right? We talk about the unconscious mind versus the conscious mind, and that soul piece, which is your mind, which is, you know, your intellect, your will, and your emotions, is always at war. The Apostle Paul said it best, right? My flesh wants to go one way, my spirit wants to go the other. And that's kind of that dichotomy, right? And so once we start just peeling the onion and just finding out, without getting into the person's story, is where are you now? Where do you want to go? Where do you want to be? There's so much freedom in that if we give ourselves to the possibilities of the Creator.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened with your dad and so many other people. It's mm-hmm. it's just a blessing to be a part of it for the ride. Like you said, just be the guy, just be the coach.
and I still remember, like, whenever I ask my unconscious mind about that moment, about that day, I remember the moment that my dad had his transformation and that he rid himself of the cancer. And I remember the specific technique that was being done. And to give some context to what I'm about to share, prior to that meeting, my dad had essentially felt disconnected from God for, at that point, I would say more than a decade at least, like mm-hmm. to the point where he was, I don't know if he was, or he was like bordering on just being straight atheist in that moment. And I remember the moment we had this technique that we've, you know, you showed me originally that I facilitated with him called perceptual positions. And he got mm-hmm. the opportunity to have a conversation with God in that moment. And one thing that I learned recently is that, so he had melanoma, which is a skin cancer, and mm-hmm. anything skin related, right, based on Dr. Homer's work, is usually a conflict of being seen. And for my dad, the one being that he needed to be seen by was God. And in that moment, he knew it undeniably. And I believe that that was the moment that everything changed for him, is when he reconnected with that. And that melanoma is one of the greatest blessings of his life, because he reconnected with God. He reconnected with gratitude following that meeting in a very profound way.
Yeah, you can see it. And so when I think about that particular event, right, such a powerful experience both for your dad, for you, and for me to see it, mm-hmm. right? It's what I always teach is that coaching, much like leadership, is more caught than taught.
Mm. mm-hmm.
Right? So by you going through that opportunity, and some people will say, well, what was there a risk? It was his dad and that sort of thing. But I believe in God that I believe that you could do this. And all you did was just walk him through the process. Mm-hmm. He had to ultimately make the decision whether he wanted to reconnect with God or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the Jesus model. He just asked some questions. He showed his compassion. He showed his love. He showed his wisdom. He asked a few questions. Do you want to be healed or mm-hmm. not? You got to make a choice. Bottom line. End of yeah. story. It's not that complicated.
That's right. Yeah. He had that opportunity to actually choose and
yeah.
know that it would be essentially that choice would be supported by yes. by not only the people in his life, but by God, by his whole reality, just because mm-hmm. he decided in that moment to do that, which yeah. I find that topic, right? It's a very, very important topic, which is the topic of decisions and how powerful a decision can be in somebody's life. Because one thing that I always share with my clients and students is that a single decision can change everything. And I notice that sometimes the hardest thing for somebody to do is to make a decision, even if it's in the direction of their good. What mm-hmm. experience do you have with guiding people to decisions? And what would you suggest to somebody who finds themselves in indecision at times?
That's a great question. I start off by letting an individual know, right? So, you know, the good book says, my people perish for lack of knowledge. And people just don't know what they don't know. There's power in your words. And sometimes what causes you to be indecisive or get stuck, if you will, is your own mind. So either you're in control of your mind or your mind will control you. And what people are not aware of, and many times, is that the words you declare becomes the house you live in. And so if you're constantly declaring, I'm stuck, I don't know, I don't know, nobody loves me, I don't know if I'm worthy, those kinds of things, they will definitely work against your own spirit. And so the first piece is that. The second piece is defining the fact that you can make a decision by commission or by omission. That indecisiveness is a decision.
That's true.
People run strategies. Not all of them are great. And indecisiveness is a strategy. The question you must ask yourself is, how's that working out for you? Mm-hmm. Or the other. So people who sometimes decide too quickly. Impulsivity. So there are extremes in both. That's why it's important to have someone that you can be accountable to. You know, I myself as a coach, I have several people other than my wonderful wife, Wanda, which, by the way, this year we'll celebrate our 47th wedding anniversary. Come on, somebody.
Congrats.
and actually, I'm so proud of her because, you know, in the last couple of weeks, she's actually sharing the stage. We're coaching a group in our local church called the Freedom Course. And so what we know is that individuals, when they're confronted with an experience, you get to decide what you want to do or what you don't want to do, or if you're just going to pass, right? Or pause, let's say. The challenge is that some things in life require a quick response, while others do not. And so sometimes people will say things and let it roll out of their mouth and you can't pull it back. And so they already commit. So that'll be a decisive person, but maybe not the proper timing. And so that's what I love about the good book in Ecclesiastes. It says, there's a time for everything. There's a time to cry. There's a time to laugh. There's a time for everything. And so one must be sensitive to the times and seasons for a decision or to pause a decision. I'd go with that.
Yeah, that is profound. And one of the things that has helped me lately in making decisions is through essentially checking in with myself to see if I'm emotionally clear about the thing I'm deciding. And if I'm feeling either too excited or too amped up. And when I use the word too, like too excited, I essentially mean that I am not even in my body. I'm in my mind. I'm in like a fantasy of whatever I think the outcome's going to be. Or if I feel fearful or if I'm feeling some kind of anxiety about a decision, I let myself come to a place of emotional clarity. I essentially ride the wave of that emotion until I come to that place. At least for me, I always feel my guidance is spoken through my feelings. And when I can find that place of emotional centeredness and clarity, I essentially make the decision at the right moment. And I don't try to be too sure or too certain about things. I just allow myself to get to a place where I feel centered and at peace, and then I make my decision. And I feel like that is in line with what you're sharing here about like the season of some of these decisions. Some of them can be made quickly because they're simple decisions. They're not complex. They don't have moving parts, so to speak. But some of them, when they have that complexity, it's like, it's important to understand how you feel sincerely and authentically about what it is that you're going to decide in that moment.
Yeah. I love the term that you use is that clarity piece, because that is also an important element. You know, the more mature you get, I'm not going to use the word older, because even at 16, people would say you have an old soul. You've heard that term before. What are you talking about? I'm 16. but now I have an understanding of what that means. And so the more you age chronologically, the more you see, the more you hear, the more you feel, the more you experience. Sometimes because of the significant negative experiences that happen, and it doesn't have to be advanced trauma, it doesn't have to be rape, it doesn't have to be you're bullied, that sort of thing, but just an ill word that someone shares about you or to you can cause you to be offended, can cause you to decide that you're offended. And notice I'm choosing my words very wisely, because there's a teaching here, and you know it as well. So I'm not speaking to you. I'm speaking and reminding myself that when you have that clarity, you don't offend. You're not quick to respond, because you realize the fact that it is not people who offend you. People will say words all day long. If you look on social media, I've taken sabbaticals from social media for periods of time. And you don't see me on there as much today as you would have seen me 5 years ago, because I've learned a thing or two. And what happens is we lose the opportunity to decide to not let people, things, or places affect you. Where you live in what you and I know, and Mario, my son, who's taught alongside of us for many years now, in a place of cause where you create, you design, you're empowered by the creator. You know where you're going, you know where you're at, you know who you are, you know your identity. Today, too many people are confused because all the opposite of those things I just mentioned. They don't know who they are. They don't know what their purpose is. They don't know what their mission is. And so when you're living in that bubble of I don't know, you can tend to swing with the cultural winds. Mm-hmm. And I see too much of that today. At the same time, going back to the initial piece of what I was sharing, is as the older you get, because of those things that happen to you, you may decide that the way you're doing life is the way you're going to continue to do life always. And that's not, it's not a sign of spiritual growth, and it's not a sign of maturity either. because we're constantly called upon to grow, to continue to learn. But the moment you decide and say, I've always done it this way, and this is who I am, and I will continue to do it that way, my words that I've received say, you are on the path to becoming irrelevant. As a leader, as a coach, as a husband, as a father, as a son, as a preacher, or a CEO. In leadership, we teach, if your business continues to do business like Blockbuster, the way you were thinking you were going to be somewhere or get somewhere, you will become irrelevant or non-existent. And so it's the same path. So we have to be, yes, we have to use discernment that what we hear doesn't take us out of alignment with who we are and our foundational values and our core. But at the same time, we have to be open, because you and I today, as well as anyone who's in the helping professions, whether they're pastors, whether they're doctors or teachers, or anyone else that's in a helping profession, are working with 4 or 5 generations today, which all speak a different language. And so communicating and being an effective communicator is going to require us to take a step back and really pause and analyze what is our intention for the delivery of what we're saying, and also to pause and hear and then listen profoundly to what is being said to receive. And while we're on these devices and people are talking to us, we can't do that. And this is perhaps one of the reasons why we're losing this generation that's coming up now, because there's so many devices that they have access to, and parents can have all kinds of wonderful reasons for giving them to them at early ages. I don't necessarily have to agree with that. But the fact that you get distracted during conversations, you and I have gone into restaurants and you look next door and you have a couple there and each one is on their own device, texting, doing things. And so where's the relationship? Mm-hmm. Right? So that also contributes to not making profitable decisions. And by profit, I don't necessarily mean ROI, return on investment. I'm not talking about just the business side. I'm talking about ROE, the return of the experience that that couple could be having if they were talking face to face, if they were sharing their hearts and their minds as one, would be much different than if they were distracted by devices or anything else that could interrupt our lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I resonate with that completely, especially when you were describing decisions and when people make the same decision over and over again, mindlessly, right? Unintentionally, so to speak. And one thing that I think is really interesting about that is the distraction is a big deterrent of any kind of clarity. So if somebody is consistently distracted, chasing the dopamine hit, if you will, on their devices, or even just in the media, like they're just looking for the next sensational story to essentially hijack their minds. And anytime somebody is consistently in that distraction, then they fail to pay attention to the actual results of their experience. And so one thing that I always share with my clients is be a student of your results, not your story. And so people will have this story and they'll try to have this cohesive continuation of this old identity that they've had. And instead of actually feeling the unpleasant feelings to give them the signal that, hey, this isn't working, they're like, boom, right here on the phone. Let me just chase the dopamine hit and bypass and not feel these feelings and resist them through this distraction. And in that way, they're not able to connect with who's in front of them. They're not able to actually sense the reality that they're creating. Because at least for me, I've always seen the signal of my results will first speak to me through my emotions. And when it's speaking to me and I'm feeling something unpleasant, I know that in that moment, I'm being guided to look at something different, to perhaps make a new decision. And that whole notion of being a student of the results has been very powerful for myself, for my clients. And one of the things that I always respected and admired about you is that you've always been a student of your results, and you have the ability to look at what's working and what's not working and make those quick decisions and be able to guide others in the same way.
Yeah, I call them leader shifts, right? The first person I need to lead is me. If I'm not able to lead me, I can't lead my wife. I can't lead my kids are all adults these days. I am so blessed. All three of them have children. We have 10 grandkids, my two daughters and my son. They're all in leadership positions. I've got a squad, yes. Yeah. And so it's being able to, as one of our predecessors would say, is being able to model excellence. So some of the breakthrough and some of what you were able to work with your dad, I learned from the best. I learned from Tony Robbins. I learned from the late Tad James, who's no longer with us. I learned from Robert Diltz and so many others. But the reality is that I learned it even before that, because at the age of 5, my father and my mother brought me to Christ, brought me to church. And so I learned through the good book. It's all there. You just have to read it. Now, some people will say, yes, but it's complicated. It could be if you make it complicated, right? It doesn't have to be complicated. What one must do is what you're talking about, is just sit still and ask for discernment. And the one who gave the men and the writers of the book the inspiration will also give you your interpretation for your life at the stage and season where you are here today. And that's what's important, because otherwise then we're just shooting in the wind. You're kind of like trying to run a race and you really don't know where you're going. And that's a little difficult. Well, actually, that's a lot difficult.
It is a lot difficult. And I think one of the reasons is that I've been meditating and reflecting on this quote lately, the Marianne Williamson quote, which says that our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate, but that we are powerful beyond measure. And I feel like where the difficulty lies, especially in interpreting texts like the Bible or texts like anything that was written centuries ago or millennia.
Right.
And I feel like one of the difficulties is that people don't want to recognize their own power. So instead of asking, what does this mean to me? Like, what does this remind me of in myself? Or what does this bring up within me? They ask outside to say, hey, can you tell me what this means to me? And they give up that sovereignty. They put themselves not at cause, but at the effect.
Yes.
And I feel like if you just ask yourself, what does this mean to me? Then the answers will be provided.
Yes, absolutely. I the greatest moments of my life for discernment have been the moments where I just keep my mouth shut and say, okay, God, what does this mean? And I can't tell you. I mean, sometimes I hear voice, but I can't tell you that it's every time, but that Holy Spirit within me will give me discernment. You call it emotions, I call it my Holy Spirit. It will say, this is what it means to you in part, because that's the other thing about revelation. It comes to you in part, doesn't come to you completely. So sometimes having that accountability partner, that individual that can coach you through whatever it is that you're reading is very instrumental. And for me in my life, especially after a very difficult 2023, where I was in July 8th, I was near death. Just going through that experience of having a chronic illness and coming out on the other side of that by God's grace was also a learning to sit more and to just be still and sit in God's peace. And that's actually so good, because the alternative, as you were alluding to, is being in the effect. And when people are in the effect, man, they're just blaming people. No, it's the president. No, it's this party. No, it's the other party. No, it's the city. It's assuming your own personal responsibility. It's been always a challenge for humanity that they want all of these rights, and we're entitled to rights. We have a Bill of Rights. We have a Constitution. But people want to carve their own niches. And in my mind, it sets you apart instead of integrates you. There is a better way. I love when I go to a religious organization, a church. I've been asked and invited to visit different churches to teach and preach. And I always have to say, disclaimer, do you know who I am? Do you know what I believe in? Do you know where I'm coming from? And they go, yes, that's exactly why we've got you here, because you're a uniter. You're not a divider. Now, I don't necessarily have to agree, and I don't agree with everybody's dogma or theory or religious rules, but I go back to the greatest coach on the planet. He went to the well. He saw the woman. She was clearly a woman of the night, you know, although it was plain day. But he spoke to her. It was prohibited. The religious people did not want that to happen, did not want that conversation. And so in our church at Miami Vineyard, we're multicultural, multi-diverse, multi-everything. And I see such a richness when everyone's life truly matters to God, and every life should matter to us. When we start carving out these niches, we start actually setting ourselves up for divisiveness. And I don't think that that is the way. Mm-hmm. At least I don't see it, where we've been very successful, you and I, in other countries, in other languages, sharing these good news of what you and I are able to do, is where people go, okay, well, he might be a New Yorker from Puerto Rico, but what he's sharing is truth. And my friends, the truth shall set you free. The problem today is that we have too many spin doctors. Mm-hmm. And it becomes the truth that I want you to hear. This is the danger of social media. It's a representation of who you want people to see you as, instead of who you truly are. And there is no greater joy than being authentic. Mm-hmm. Because when you're authentic, there's an openness to heal. There's an openness to grow. And there's an openness to share who you are so that others can grow.
That's right. Yeah, it seems like a lot of the world promotes inauthenticity, but says all the right words and puts all the right angles and filters on social media to portray authenticity. And it's not the same thing at all. And I love what you're saying about unifying. 'Cause one thing that I've always respected about you and your teachings is your willingness to essentially learn from all different schools of thought and bring it into a unifying message, and not being trapped by anyone's dogma for that matter. And that's something that I've always really respected and admired about your teaching. It's helped me open myself up to even teachings that maybe I don't fully agree with, but I can see that there's truth in this teaching over here and in this teaching over here. Mm-hmm. And I've always found that fascinating, because a lot of people, when they, let's say, commit to a faith, they might trap themselves in the dogma of that and not allow themselves other schools of thought to be able to contribute. When at the end of the day, what's really happening when all those different opportunities and different schools of thought come in, it's essentially, the way I see it, is like it's God giving you different tools to essentially create a unifying message. So I know that you're very committed to your faith, and you've also studied things like NLP in the coaching world, timeline therapy, hypnosis, studied. I think recently Chinese medicine has been one of the more recent studies,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. Germanic medicine, new Germanic medicine, Chinese medicine, all those things. So one can, and of course not everyone can do this, and I don't mean to be a lead or anything like that, no. What I mean to say is that if you know who you are, you know what to do, you know where you stand, and as Paul the Apostle said, you're not moved by the winds and the shift of culture. but you're able to continuously renew your mind, as he wrote in the letter to the Romans. And what that means to me personally, and in my doctorate in ministry, I actually did my dissertation on Paul and the life of marriage and family and that sort of thing, is that you're able to go into places and spaces, kind of like what Jesus did, and listen to people's hearts and listen to people's stories, and then just be able to share the good news and provide an invitation to come in. It's a different type of an outreach, if you will. And so I can do that without succumbing to being part of a cult or being part of some man-made system called religion that's going to take me away from the one true God. And so being able to do that with love and with compassion is, you just need to be grounded, mm-hmm. just grounded in your faith. Mm-hmm. And also know the fact that people get to make choices. So if he gave me free will, then I must be able to respect the fact that everyone else also has free will and can make a choice. I would hope that they make the right choice. Yes. But, you know, even as I was raising, Wanda and I were raising our kids, we grounded them in faith. We grounded them with what we learned from scriptures. But as they matured, notice what I said, as they matured, you know, not when they were 12, you get to decide what you're going to do. Not when you're 15, when you're mature and we come to an agreement that you know what the consequences of your actions and decisions are, then guess what? You're on your own. And I've got to say, all of us at some point in our lives have tripped, stumbled, fallen, got into potholes and that sort of thing. But the question is not how many times you fall, but it's how many times are you willing to get up and then learn from the fall, you know, so you fail forward kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. And essentially allow those moments of failing or falling to be information, to be
yes.
information. One thing that I really love is this idea of when you truly live sincerely, you're not shielded from the consequences of your actions. And when you're not shielded from the consequences of your actions, you can truly learn. So if we don't shield ourselves from that, and we like allow ourselves to experience whatever it is to trip on the pothole, then we can in that moment learn, okay, this is not the best way. Maybe I'll walk this way the next time. And so that's one of the importances of living a sincere life, living an authentic life, being grounded in your values, like you're saying, is one thing that this reminds me of something that Alan Watts said in one of his lectures. He said, most people don't know what they want because they don't know who they are.
Hmm.
And when somebody doesn't know who they are, they essentially just go to the whims of their impulses in those moments. Or
any like, roadway will take them nowhere.
That's right. Yes, exactly. And so for somebody who is hearing this and wants to essentially begin to ground themselves in some values, or they want to go through the journey of like answering that question, who am I? What would you suggest as a first step for somebody who's hearing this and they're like, okay, you know what? I'm going to figure out who I am. What would you suggest to somebody doing there?
Oh, that is so good. That's so good, man. And I want the audience to know is we didn't rehearse this.
No.
this guy sent me a message. What was it, yesterday? Can we do a podcast? Yeah. And I go, sure, I'm in. Because whenever Victor calls, as long as my schedule permits, I'm in. And if my schedule doesn't permit, we're going to schedule it anyway.
That's right.
At some point in time. But it just so happens that I had a window today. Look, it for me, right? This is for me. Doesn't have to be for anybody else. I'm speaking to me, to Mario. There's two approaches in life that you can take to the realization of who God created you to be. Now, hang in there with me. I know some of you may not believe in God, and that's okay. That's your choice. But just hang with me here. As I look at this universe and the wonders of the stars and the beauty of our nature, our flora and our fauna. I don't know if you've ever been to Costa Rica, Victor, but oh my God, if you really want to see flora and fauna at its best, we have some beautiful places here in America as well. It all goes back to the garden. And the reason why I said it all goes back to a garden, because how people will take an approach to the creator will be dependent upon their approach as Adam and Eve decided in the garden. If you recall the story, there was a tree of life and there was a tree of the knowledge of good and evil. There were two trees, not one. Actually, there were more than that. It was a garden. Come on, somebody. And so the creator gave him some instructions, right? He says, you know, just like when you buy a toy for your child, it comes with instructions. And sometimes we don't read the instructions. Parents sometimes don't read the instructions. I've been guilty of that. What happens? You mess up. The toy falls apart or you do something wrong. You're putting the furniture together. You don't read the instructions. I'm talking to my fellow men out there because we don't want to read the instructions. We want to get it done. And the wife goes, read the instructions, read the instructions. And they do. And then we get it right the second time or the third time or the fourth time. Who knows? But going back to the story, it's a choice. They had everything. They could command. They could control. They could name it. They can claim it. And the most important thing is they had eternal life. That's it. That's a choice. But then they get a whisper. They get a conversation that says, well, you know, it's not really true that you're going to die. What's really going to happen is that you're going to be like God. So what comes into play? The word, the whisper, is about significance. And what is significance? It's a human need. But then the significance evolved into pride. And so this is, I can be like God syndrome. And so then they go and they eat of the fruit. It wasn't an apple. Nowhere does it say it was an apple. It was a fruit. So their approach was, instead of going to the tree of life, they're going to go for the knowledge of the fruit of good and evil. And the consequence is of that decision is how many people approach God today. So if you bear with me, religion is all about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. There are rules, right? And there are things that you must do to get to God or to be classified as good, etc. And then there's the approach of the tree of life. And what the good book says is only the truth shall set you free. Ah, so then the question becomes, then where is the truth? Well, the truth, I know that Victor has been into Ecclesiastes lately through the Tower of Solomon, which is, well, that could be a whole nother podcast. But anyway, we might even get there today a little bit. So the wisdom writings will share with us that if you go through the New Testament, is that the truth shall set you free, and the fact that Jesus died for our sins in order for us to not have that pay that ultimate price. And so that's called grace. So on the one hand, your approach to God can be grace, or your approach to God can be rules and religion. And how is that working out for the world right now? You get to make a choice. Now, once you decide that you're going to pursue life and that you're going to have this relationship with the Creator, it actually says that he placed in you, in your mother's womb, an identity, a unique gifting. But you get to decide if you're going to flip the switch or not. How do I know this? I'm glad you asked. Well, I know this because David, you know, King David, the guy that, you know, was a shepherd guy and his father didn't think anything of him, but he knew who he was, identity. His brothers didn't think much of him. Same story happened with Joseph, the tunic of multicolors, if you remember, Egypt and all that stuff. His brothers sold him to slavery. They didn't know who he was. He did too. But the challenge with Joseph was he didn't know the time of the season. He started talking about his dreams when he was very young and didn't really know how to nurture that, how to convey it. And so that costs him. And later on, it actually serves him because there was a purpose. There was an identity. But going back to David, he says in Psalm 139, he's having this conversation with the Creator. And he says, you knew me in my mother's womb. You interwove my very being, and my soul knows it well. So he knows who he is, and he knows his calling. He knows it so well that when he's having this little conflict, not generated by him, but by King Saul, who is the king, and starts to become jealous, pride, hello, again, pride, steps in. He has an opportunity. David has an opportunity to kill the king, but he doesn't. He says, be it far from me to kill the anointed one from God. And he doesn't. And so Saul is obviously dethroned, and David comes up. So he knows who he is. Fast forward. There's a prophet called Jeremiah. And if you look at the book of Jeremiah in chapter 1, instead of the conversation where David is saying to God, you know me, God is actually saying to Jeremiah, I knew you in your mother's womb, and I created you to be a prophet amongst the nations. Wow, that is mind-blowing. There's another piece of scripture, and again, not going too deep on you here, but there's another piece of scripture that says that the Creator has placed eternity upon your life, upon your soul. And that what that means is that you can search high and low until you align yourself with the Creator. You're always going to have that hunger, like there's that peace that's missing beyond all understanding. So the first place of being able to know who you are and that identity is not about what social media is talking about today at all. It's not about what the culture is talking about today at all. It's who the Creator designed you to be in your mother's womb. That special gifting, whether it's a teacher, whether it's a police officer, whether it's a nurse, whether it's a doctor. My mind is blown, Victor, when you ask me this question, because what comes to me at this point is a conversation I had with Melanie, my oldest, and we were stationed in Illinois. I opened the door because somebody rang the bell, and then Melanie comes. Apparently, she knew her friend was coming. I didn't know that. We had just moved into the neighborhood. We just been transferred to St. Louis area. We lived on the Illinois side, and it's a friend, and his name was Dane. I think he was about maybe 12-ish. And because of what I had learned in the military and what Sergeant Tommy Tucker taught me, my first question after I greeted him was, hey, who do you want to be when you grow up? This is a 12-year-old. You're talking, we're talking in the 80s. We're not talking 2024. He said to me, I am going to be a doctor. Okay. Guess what? Today, he is an orthopedic surgeon, doctor. Not only is he a doctor, he is the chief of the Loyola University Orthopedic Clinic in Chicago. And he's also married to my daughter, Melanie. When you know who you are, you know what to do. So that identity piece, I would say, is extremely important that one consult with the Creator and with your parents, with the knowledge and coaching of what do you aspire, or who do you aspire to be, having those conversations. What are you thinking, Victor? What are you thinking? Doctor, surgeon, whatever. And some people may say, oh, that's too early. Nonsense. Every child that I've had conversations with and have brought up that conversation and then brought the parents into that conversation have developed a strategic plan to get to where they want to be, as opposed to individuals who you and I have coached that have gone many years to medical school or law school because their parents made them into this mold of you need to be this or that, and they're frustrated, depressed. And I know attorneys that are now teachers and spent all that money on law school because that's who someone else wanted them to be. So identity is extremely important. And the sooner that you come to terms with who you are and not being led by your emotions, not being led by your feelings, not being led by what other people think that you are or should be, because those are what we call installations.
And you brought that up, the installations part.
I'm gonna let you roll with it. But we as adults, and sometimes even as early as I like to say, and I don't mean this in a harsh way, that high school could be very unforgiving. Mm-hmm. High schoolers could be very hard. Mm-hmm. But the installation starts there. The little groups, the little gangs, the little niches. This is who you are. This is who you're not. Or you're not one of us. Or those kind of conversations do not help. And that's where what the words we are telling people of their identity or who they are, first of all, causes confusion. Because it's you installing on them who you wish them to be. Two, it's your own projection. And your perception causes your projection. You're projecting onto them your own life or maybe what you missed out on. Going back to the example of I was a doctor, my father was a doctor, my grandfather was a doctor, so my son has to be a doctor. No, no, not at all. That installation piece is extremely, extremely dangerous. Mm-hmm. Again, words matter.
Oh, they matter. That's one of, I think one of the most important lessons that we've talked about is how the words you use construct the house you live in. And those words can create the installations for other people. And the words that one is using could be, again, like you said, their projections, the things that they feel like they've missed out on or that they feel they should be doing rather than what they're destined to be doing, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I love what you said there, and there's a lot to unpack with it. The thing that I really took away from what you just shared around discovering that identity is I've never actually heard that story of Adam and Eve and the two trees. I never heard about the two trees. And then the comparison with like rules, religion on this side and grace on this side. And that blows my mind, because if we try to find our identity through the rules and the knowledge of good and evil, then we're ultimately going to be swayed by everyone else's projections. Rather, if we are able to tap into that grace, into essentially being centered and being still in our soul and allowing ourselves to be guided, we know exactly what we're here to do and exactly what we're here to be. And it's yes. When we are able to get into that place, like for me, I always knew from when I was a kid that I was going to be a teacher of some kind. It started off with being a teacher of martial arts was going to be like the first thing that I wanted to do, which I am doing today just for fun. So I am indeed doing that. But for myself, I wanted to be essentially the teacher that I was always seeking as a kid, like someone who could give me guidance in some of these complex emotional experiences of life, whether it's death, whether it is finding friends and finding a social circle and being able to align with that fully, or if it's living out one's passions and inspirations. I always knew that I was here to be a teacher of some sort. Mm. And that's essentially what we're doing here on this podcast.
Yes, that's good. That's good. That's good. And this slice, if you will, of the two trees is part of a course that I'm teaching called the Freedom Course. And the Freedom Course is a powerful 12-week small group. We're doing it here at Miami Vineyard. It was originated by the Church of the Highlands in Alabama. And so there are many faith-based organizations that are running it. Obviously, I get to put my own flavor and my own style based on what God has given me and that sort of thing. And it culminates with an encounter weekend, a Friday evening and a Saturday half day of just sharing these distinctions. And the other distinction that I want to share is on that tree of life is that spirit. Because what happens in the garden is obviously the spirit of God is removed from Adam and Eve. Mm-hmm. That communion, that relationship is gone. So if you recall the story, after they disobey and they eat of the fruit, and they now know what is good and what's bad, and they cover themselves. You hear the conversation as it's narrated in the story of Genesis, where God asks the question, "Where are you?" Well, it's not like God didn't know where they were. But he was seeking what was the response going to be. And they clearly were in the effect. One started to blame the other. Eve starts to blame the serpent. Adam starts to blame the wife. Everybody's blaming people, places, things. And so the spirit of God is removed because they eat of the wrong tree. So if you come to the tree of life, it is that reunification of God's spirit with you. And the soul is a separate component. The soul is your mind, your will, and your emotions. And so the soul is what is will always be at odds with the spirit. And this is where they went sideways. And it's so interesting when you can make those distinctions and you go, oh, this is the result. Going back to your initial conversation of what you and I both do, let's evaluate our results. Let's examine, let's audit ourselves.
Yeah. I think that's, you were sharing with me off air a really important story about a person who was very clearly able to observe the results, which you were talking about how there was a man who was a self-proclaimed atheist who would still be, who was the most consistent attendee in one of the church groups that you were describing. And if you wouldn't mind sharing that story, because this is a person who very clearly said, "I do not believe in what you're saying, but it is making my life better." So I'm here.
I am totally blown away of what God can do in a person's life. If you're willing to listen, right? If you're willing to be open. And so several months back, one of my leaders in our church organization saw a need, and they created a niche. They created a millennials group, and they took our approach, which is in Miami Vineyard, we have one of our values is we're always looking for the one more. So we're looking for folks that are unchurched. So we're very heavy into community service and food drives and how we can help the needy and those kinds of things. Well, as part of that, he started a group of millennials, and he put them on several apps, the events, and they go golfing, and then there's a little bit of Bible teaching. They've done several other things together. Well, I was able to speak to them. I think it was maybe on the second or third Tuesday, and was blown away. They had about 35 individuals already. And I said, wow, this is amazing. There's obviously a need here. These are young men and women who are business owners and or in business somehow. And so I talked to the leader who created the group, Pastor Omar Pastorani, and I said, "Tell me a little bit about who these folks are so I can get to know them." And he says, "Well, Pastor Mario, this individual here, this individual there." But what caught my attention was as they described the self-proclaimed atheist young man. And they said, yes, he has said he is an atheist, but he is a consistent attender, and now he's our best recruiter because he sees that change happens here. And it's good change. It's, and so when you see that in the life of someone who is clearly not in alignment or has not been in alignment with religion, but starts to experience God through the people that are in the room, it is such a remarkable difference. Mm-hmm. And that's the nature of who we are and what we do here at Miami Vineyard.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful because that's one of my favorite principles, is to be a student of the results and to be able to, even if you don't agree with somebody's model of the world, even if you don't agree with somebody's religious beliefs, if you can see that the results and the reality of it are of your benefit and benefit to the people around you, then by all means, you know, allow yourself to experience and don't allow the knowledge, the knowledge side of things to dissuade you from something that could truly be a blessing in your life.
Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of stuff out there in the world, as you and I both know. And so it's not that knowledge is bad, right? There is something to be said, even in the good book, My People Perish for Lack of Vision, for Lack of Knowledge. But then it's, who are you modeling? What are you modeling? Right? I like to refer to my currently pastor. I serve as the executive pastor. Mm-hmm. So I lead from the second chair. My lead pastor, Kevin Fisher, has been pastor for 30 years. He's from Wisconsin, Green Bay Packer. Well, I won't hold that against him. but he's a student of the results. He measures the results. He's not all about the numbers. Nothing wrong with the numbers. So he does look at that, but he's a student of the results. How can we serve this community, in our case, Miami, and beyond, because we're online as well, and do so and meeting people where they are? And that's extremely important.
Absolutely.
Meeting people where they are, because that's the model.
Mm-hmm. It respects the model of the world of everyone around us, right? It's like you were sharing earlier. You have been granted free will in your human experience, and you respect that in everyone else. And I feel like that ability to respect somebody's model of the world and realize that we're all human, we all get to experience this love and unity together. That's the key, that regardless of what school of thought we come from, we can all come together in the results and the realities that we are able to create from the blessings that we receive.
Yes, absolutely. And the tension is always, and will probably, as long as we're here on this earth, always be that we want all these rights without assuming our responsibilities of what was my role in this? Mm-hmm. What was my role in this relationship? What was my role in this job, or the reason why I was fired, or why my wife or left me, or husband, whatever the case may be? When you start looking at things, again, that measuring the results, what was my role? What was my responsibility that perhaps I neglected? Mm-hmm. So it's not to assume guilt. It's not to assume shame, because that's actually what happened in the garden. The blame game, the shame game. No. Mm-hmm. It's about coming to the place of knowing who you are, where you are, and making a shift as to where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because too many people today, and often, try to live their life moving forward by looking through the rearview mirror and living in the what coulda, shoulda, woulda. And that's just a fantasy. You know, it's like trying to live your life modeling what you see on social media. It's a fantasy. Mm-hmm. Trying to live your life on what you've read in novels. It's a fantasy. You know, this is the challenge, and let's not even go down that rabbit trail, but of pornography. It is a fantasy, which leads to an addiction, which leads to disrupted lives, marriages, sin, and everything else. Now, if we come to the realization that we have the ability to, yes, choose, but that there's a cause, right? There's a choice to be made, but that whatever choice I make is going to have a consequence. Then perhaps if we look forward into the future and say, what is this going to cost me if I go down this path or this path? If I choose the tree of life, dude, easy peasy, eternal life, I'm good. Mm-hmm. If I choose over here, am I really and truly going to be like God? Oh, but I'm going to know what's good and what's bad. Well, that's not the choice, but you get to choose.
Mm-hmm. And that's the dignity of being a human, right? Of free yes. will. And this is really interesting, this idea of when we live in the fantasy, this is where we begin to create suffering because we abstract our reality. And one of the things that Zen really talks about is how the idea and the notion of Zen is not a philosophy. It's not a religion. It's a direct experience. It describes direct experience of like being here in the world and experiencing all that is in the now. And mm-hmm. when we go into the fantasy, we essentially take ourselves away from this and the ability to connect with everyone else who is experiencing this right here. Well, right.
For some people, it's easier to live in the fantasy than it is in the real world because they do not wish to face reality. Reality could be scary for them, but those emotions of fear, guilt, and shame are obviously destructive. If harbored for more than 6 months, as you and I both know, will then may transfer into your body, into some type of illness, mm-hmm. right? And so the idea is to identify where you are, what is it that you're experiencing, what is true and what is not true. And you may not have the capacity to do that on your own. So there's the situation where you can call a coach. You can call Victor. Don't call me. This is his podcast. and be able to really choose life. Because there is no doubt the truth shall set you free. I've always been asked in the past, there was a time where I was I'm still a pastor, but I was a pastor and I was what we call bivocational. I was an attorney. And at that particular time, I was a prosecutor here in Miami. I worked from 2000 to 2003 mm-hmm. Here as an assistant state attorney. And people would ask me, how is it that you can put people in jail and that sort of thing? And so I said, well, I appreciate the question, but let me be clear. I don't put people in jail. Someone has made a decision to violate a rule or a law, and decisions have consequences. Now, I asked them the question, have you ever been in a courtroom? And they go, well, yeah, I had a traffic ticket once. And I said, well, did you notice what was the sign behind the judge? And they go, yeah, it says, we who labor here seek the truth. And I go, yes. And you know why? Because the truth can set you free. But it's if you're living in the truth, but if you're living in deceit and you commit a crime, there are consequences. So there is no dichotomy between being a man of gospel, of sharing the light and sharing the love of Jesus and being a prosecutor. There is no dichotomy because my approach actually was to look at cases and say, is this true or not? Did this person really do this? I would go beyond and looking at the facts from a different perspective, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying everybody does that, but that's how, at least that was how I went into that position. And I learned tremendously on the plight of individuals that have mental health challenges and committed crimes because of those mental health. So it served me again in learning because when I left there, then I worked with individuals and through our coaching practices in our church organizations were able to help many people like that. As a matter of fact, in our church just past week, we had a second chance fair with individual companies that come in and the state attorney's office to seal and expunge people's records that have misdemeanors and things like that. Mm-hmm. So there are many, many different ways to show and demonstrate the love of the Creator. And so beautiful. It just depends upon who you are.
Yeah, I love that. I got two more questions for you before we wrap up. The first one is, you were saying that some of the work that you do and in what you're involved in now is available virtually for people. So if people are listening to this, they're really resonating with it, where can they find you? Where can they get in touch with you to learn more about what you do?
Okay, great. All right. Well, there's two ways. If you would like to check us out, our website at Miami Vineyard is miamivineyard.com. That's very simple. And in there, you will be able to see the different small groups. You'll see our location. If you're in the Miami area, I invite you to come visit us. The address is there. We have weekend services. We have things for all ages, whether it's kids, infants, youth, young adults. You heard me talk about the millennials and that sort of thing. If you're also in the Miami area, I teach live, typically on Wednesday nights. I'm teaching a course right now that's very similar in title, but it's different. It's called Freed Up. It's about financial freedom and stewardship. And then Thursday nights, I'm teaching the Freedom course. And we do it by semester, so there's other opportunities there. And of course, my bio's there, or my email. You can contact me that way. Our other website, where we teach and prepare coaches, is neurostrategiccoach.com. And whichever one of those mediums, we're glad to serve.
Amazing. And my last question for you is, so one of the ways that I construct these interviews, and I want to share with you this pre-frame before I ask this question, is this is the Zen Stoic path, right? And the Zen Stoic path is a hybrid philosophy that aims towards one's liberation. And at the same time, I realize that Zen Stoic as a philosophy, just like anything else, is not liberation itself. It's simply a way of pointing to it. And the whole idea and the whole purpose is to be able to have the tools and resources and skills to be able to live a liberated life. So my question to you is, what does it mean to you to live a liberated life?
Oh, that's amazing. Well, to be liberated means to be completely free. And because we're living this human experience, there will be periods of time where you will feel completely free, and there will be times where the tank may be half empty or three quarters empty. And so for me, it's recognizing that each and every day I must check in with God. And what comes to mind, I'm so glad you asked this question because I wasn't prepared for it, but I just got a download, is the conversation that David had, a prayer actually with God, where he says to God something like this: search me, O Lord, and see if there is anything within me that needs to be shifted. Yeah, he was talking about sin, and we all know that David had his issues. But then he came to a point where he had a conversation after his sin where he completely and truly repented. So when I think of liberation and pointing towards liberation, it's that repentance. And it's not about a religious repentance where you go in some booth or somewhere. And no, it's about you having a conversation with the Creator and recognizing and auditing yourself and saying, I've done this, I've done that, and no one even knows it, and no one has to know it. But you know it, and because you know it, I want to be free from guilt, from shame, from offense, from feeling offended. And then perhaps that might take another conversation. It may take a conversation with a person that perhaps you have somehow offended or betrayed if that person's still with us. If the person is not with you, then suffice to say you have a conversation with the Creator, because we don't necessarily ask other people for forgiveness for their benefit. We ask other people for their forgiveness so that you can be free. And I know that's a little different, and that's okay. You know, I've had periods in my life where I sensed, I felt that I did absolutely nothing wrong. And then somehow in the relationship, I felt a tension. And I'm not talking about attention. I'm talking about tension, the tightness, like the tightrope. And so I examined myself, first of all, and I asked God for forgiveness and examined, and I go, wait a minute. This wasn't me. But I still went to the other person and said, if I have offended you, if I've done something wrong, intentionally or maybe unintentionally, I ask for your forgiveness. Oh my God, Victor, I can't tell you how freeing that is. It's freedom. But again, voices will come your way, whether it's girlfriends, boyfriends, a spouse, or somebody else. Why are you asking for forgiveness? You didn't do anything wrong, blah, 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 blah. And then pride comes in and you go, oh, well, I'm ashamed. I really don't want to have a conversation with that person. So I would say releasing shame, releasing fear, releasing guilt, and that can only be done by aligning yourself to the truth. Again, the truth shall set you free.
Beautiful. Dr. Mario, thank you so much for being on the Zen Stoic Path, man. It was a pleasure to have you here.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much, Victor. Appreciate you.